Hello, and welcome back to the Dungeons & Dragons Podcast UK. My name is Yasmin, and I will be the DM.
Hi, my name is Samantha. I play Elora Greyvale, and she is a sorceress from the province of Nevalia.
Hello, I'm Colin, and I play Cuin de Greymont, a paladin from Flarben in the province of Gavinny.
Hi, I'm Ryan. I play Ogvar Shawfort, a goat-herding, mushroom-seeking ranger from Kessig.
Hi, I'm Rick, and I play Otto, a spring sage from Hanweir, sworn to the land, wandering the plain and setting wrongs to right with his ursine companion, Bojo.
Communing with Merrill and Beryl, the two rats on the fourth floor, Otto's inner eco-warrior got the better of him, and ultimately his efforts as a freedom fighter proved fruitless, as they strongly voted not to vacate the creature comforts of captivity. Wending their way ever upwards to floor 5, the team emerge into some sort of plant potting room. It was filled with spriggy saplings, seedlings, and spiny specimens, as well as herbology paraphernalia, alchemy alembics, and a solitary cold cauldron. But it was the next level that really roused the ranger's interest. As he bathed in the beauty of the giant glasshouse, he presently found himself foraging amongst the foliage of its truly tropical surroundings. However, seemingly, not all of the fronds were friendly, as a vexed vine attempted a half-hearted attack on its visitors. Not wanting to harm the leafy interloper, everyone swiftly scarpered to the next staircase and made good their getaway. And, as it turned out, Elora's jibes about Esther were indeed justified. Episode 127, A Wizardly Welcome.
You all enter into this room, and you see Esther. She's nestled quite comfortably into a big, thick, padded armchair. It looks to be of some sort of rich midnight blue velvet. She has her feet up on a small, mismatched pouf, with a long fork, long toasting fork with a large crumpet on the end being toasted over a little kind of standalone metal burner, and she has in her other hand a mug of what you would assume to be a hot beverage, either tea or coffee, from the steam which is wafting up. And she looks incredibly comfortable ensconced in the upper floor of this room.
Laura's going to pick herself up off the floor. She's going to flap her cloak, which is still dripping everywhere all over the steps. She's going to rub her hand down her face, look up, see Esther, and go, "Well, it's worse than I thought. Look at her." She's going to point and then turn around to say to the others, like, indicate to the others on the stairs.
Hello there, Esther. It's good to see you. We didn't know where you'd gone. How did you get in?
Hello, dearie. I was invited in. Lovely young gentleman. Eric, he's just gone just to the kitchen to make some more tea. Come and take a seat, dearie.
Okay, I'm not going to refuse that.
And Ogvar will go and sit down by Esther.
Yep, you ensconce yourself in a similarly mismatched chair. This one's quite a low-seated chair. It's maybe a foot off the floor in this horrific floral print pattern. It is a masterpiece. It's like straight out of someone's great grandma's house. Honestly, it's terrible.
Like 70s wallpaper, 70s wallpaper, that sort of thing.
Yeah, just the most horrific flower print you can imagine. That is it. It is overstuffed, nice. Quite firm and plump and lumpy, but it's a chair.
Well, Alora's going to take her cloak off and kind of drop it in a soggy pile on the floor, and then she's going to tentatively just perch her soggy backside on the very edge of a chair so she doesn't get water everywhere. Although there is water pooling around the bottom of her boots, I think.
Okay.
And, Kieran's going to turn to us and go, "Oh, yeah. Well, you obviously had a better way than we did.
I almost got eaten."
"Oh, yeah, that wasn't a joke. That wasn't a joke, and he's not joking either."
"Oh, oh dear.
Why couldn't we just come in through a door? Why go through all of that?"
"Well, you'll have to ask the gentleman himself. And with that, as you all sat in this room, so you've come up to the top of the stairs, and it is effectively half of the floor is an open living room. You can see some nice thick rugs on the floor. Again, mismatched, you can see one round one which is red, one long rectangular one which is like this kind of tealy purple kind of combo. You can see these mismatched chairs. There are four chairs mismatched. You can see this little kind of metal stove burner which Esther's had. It's got a little door on the front where she's toasting her crumpet, and it's got a long pipe which goes up into the ceiling towards the outer edge of the wall. You can see various other eclectic items. You can see bookshelves filled with books. You can see general knickknacks, belongings. You can see a basket which looks like it contains some knitting of some kind or some darning. It's generally just a living quarters. And looking into the room, you can see on the left hand side, so the back left quarter of the room, it is walled off. And then the back right quarter of the room, you can see it's set back a little further, but there is a door. And as Esther says, you'll have to ask the gentleman himself, the door opens and out walks a relatively tall man. He stands around 5'11", you would say, at a guess. He's quite tall, and he has a extremely regal air about him. He's the kind of person that as soon as he walks into the room, he commands the attention. He has blue twinkling eyes, and they are the bluest shade of blue you have quite possibly ever seen on a person. His hair is semi-slicked back. It's fully white into a long plait which sits at the nape of his neck. And he has a very triangular, very well-trimmed, long triangular beard and moustache that frames his face. He's got very sharp features. His nose is quite sharp and quite hawkish. And he's got quite a stern expression. His eyebrows have almost got this permanent furrow, and they swoop up towards his hairline. Everything about him seems just incredibly sharp, and he just has this aura about him. You can see his hands, they are wizened. You can see a couple of liver spots in the back of his hands, though they are well kept and very neat, as he holds a mug of, you'd assume to be some kind of hot drink, the same as Esther. His clothing, he wears what appears to be like a tight undershirt, and then draped over the top is this magnificent robe. It's got this large cowled hood which almost rumples over his shoulders in these vast kind of rolls that trails down his back. And it's got this almost kind of semi-cape cut where it kind of comes from the centre of his chest outwards. It is a deep midnight blue, and as you look at it, you can actually see that as it gets further down the garment towards the floor, the hems of his robes, which sweep dramatically behind his beautifully polished black boots, are a pitch black. And it's actually dotted with various kind of sigils and almost constellation marks, you can see. They clearly mean something, but to the untrained eye, Elora, actually, make me a knowledge nautical or a knowledge sailing.
A knowledge nautical. yeah, she's too busy with her wet clothing to take all of this in too quickly. That was a natural one.
Yeah.
Okay. Yay! Start the evening.
You are not paying any attention at all. But the rest of you can see that everything about him is topped off with that kind of silver hardware, silver cuffs, silver stitching on the edge of his clothing. Everything is trimmed with silver, essentially. And he walks into the room, and I'd say he walks into the room like he owns the place. He does own the place. But it is this purely commanding aura that as soon as that door opens, your attention is immediately drawn to him. Apart from Alora, yes. He steps further into the room, walking to stand by Esther. And you then notice that he has what appears to be a little butter pat in his hand, like a little ceramic rectangular dish with a little cozy at the top and a butter knife, which he promptly hands to Esther, and she takes it. Oh, thank you. And behind him you see trailing another figure. This figure is slightly shorter. He's approximately 5'9", and you'd say quite fairly young, in his early 30s, you would say. He has slicked back black hair, and you can see these kind of shots of grey from his like widow's peak, just beginning to shoot through from the centre and from the temples. And he has this big mustachio. It is this beautifully maintained thin moustache that sweeps up under his nose, curves back down, and then protrudes from either side of his face, visibly protrudes into this beautiful twirl at the end on each side. It is an almighty moustachio, and he's wearing a very traditional cut suit. It's clearly a three-piece suit. And although it looks very fancy and it's got the bit of, you know, silver trim or gold trim on it, it is clearly quite worn. As you look at it, you can see there are slight repair marks, there are slight stains around the cuffs. It's clearly well cared for and has been incredibly well cared for over the years, but it is old, you would say. And he enters the room with another tray of crumpets and jam and stuff and general kind of tea time fare.
You'll have to excuse me for being a little rude, but for some reason I feel like I've been on a rather pointless trip and I'm feeling slightly soggy and slightly tired. So I am going to bottle shape into the form of a large dog. Very long greyish white hair.
Okay.
Beautiful amber eyes.
Yep.
And I'm going to wander over to where this stove is, and I'm quickly going to start shaking myself to get rid of as much excess water as I can in front of everyone, including the guys in the suit, and lie down in front of the stove.
Okay. Yeah.
Making a real point about how I'm feeling right now.
The older gentleman almost expects this and quickly kind of sidesteps behind a chair to dodge most of it. Esther gets a little damp and she gives a no! And pops the one hand up, which swings the toasting fork precariously up into the air with the crumpet. And unfortunately, this other gentleman, the younger man, gets a face full of soggy dog water. Yep, there we go.
I may let out a small contented growl.
Okay.
And you lot think you've got problems. I am absolutely soaked. Oh, hello. Who are you? Jenrik? Mr. Jenrik? Jenrik some?
Jenrik.
I'm Alora.
Jenrik will do, dear.
Oh, okay, Jenrik then. Well, seeing as this is your place, I suppose I'd better. I'm Alora, as I said.
He smiles at you, and you see his eyes kind of light up with this kind of flash of amusement. He inclines his head to the right, not even looking at the younger man next to him. Eric, go fetch some blankets and some towels. Give them to our guests. The younger man puts the tray down on a small side table. It balances precariously, and he disappears off into another room, this into the back left corner, which you'd assume is another room. He disappears off. You hear a door open and some scuffling occur. In the meantime, while Eric is off getting some towels and some blankets for you, Jenrik looks at you as you're gathered. Kieran, have you kind of... So four chairs, so just so we've got clear vision in mind. Esther's in a chair, Ogvar's in a chair. Laura, where are you?
I'm perched right on the edge of a chair because I'm dripping pools of water everywhere.
Okay, you're perched on a chair. Kieran?
I'm just stood there.
You're stood there. And obviously Otto's in front of the fire. Yeah, okay. So he looks around at all of you. Well, firstly, I can sense your displeasure from here. And I apologise for the lengths that you've had to go to access my abode. I hope you will understand that these are dark times, and although I may be powerful, I am still an old man. Hardly the days of my youth when I used to run around the plain willy-nilly. And I apologise for putting you through the trial, but I had to know your will and I had to know your heart.
I did declare my business, but all I got was a flower pot on the head for my troubles, which wasn't very pleasant, I have to say. I still have a slight headache. Was that really necessary?
Well, I'm not sure about the flower pot. That must have been Eric, clumsy boy.
Marvellous.
However, silver tongues do not make for truth-sayers.
Yeah, whatever. Well, I suppose, has Esther told you why we're here?
Oh no, darling Esther hasn't said a word. I've merely offered her hospitality. Storm is blowing in and I can hardly leave such an elegant lady out in the cold. And with that, Eric reappears with said blankets and towels and promptly begins passing them out.
Laura will hold a hand out for one and say, she'll try and take the biggest, thickest one, because she's really wet. Thank you, Eric. And she's just going to start she's actually going to remove her hat and start toweling her hair at plaits and just trying to dry herself off a little bit.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll take a blanket and just stick it around his shoulders. Thank you very much, Eric. It's very kind of you.
Eric smiles at you and goes, pleasure.
Thank you.
Pleasure.
Hopefully this will sort everything out. But thank you anyway.
Kewin, are you... How are you actually... How is Kewin looking?
Through his eyes.
I'd imagine it looks like he's just been swallowed by a dragon, quite possibly. I mean, you're probably covered in bits of stringy phlegm and all sorts of throat gunk.
Yeah. Yeah, Kieran's going to turn to Eric and Joe. I hope you don't mind, but is there perchance a place where I could clean up a little bit? I don't really want to put your blankets around me at the moment. Yes.
Jemmick gives you once over, nods. Yes, Eric, escort the gentleman to the bathroom, and perhaps while he's tidying himself up, you can assist with cleaning some of that armour off, perhaps? Make yourself useful?
Awesome!
Eric nods, and he's very clearly, his body language, he's very clearly deferent to Jenrik. Jenrik is clearly, obviously, he's not being treated as a slave of sorts or being ordered around. He's clearly doing this of his own free will. But obviously he listens to Jenrik, and Jenrik is assigning him jobs to do. He smiles, of course, yes, no worries, of course. And he escorts you, Kewin, into this room, which he's just got the towels from. And when you walk in, you can see that it is indeed a bedroom. There is a large master bed in there. Again, this kind of dark blue, almost kind of velvety looking covers and sheets. A big four-poster bed with purple hangings. And the room is covered with stacks of books. There's a large armoire where you've got all, like, the doors are open and there's clothes have been kind of semi-pulled out. And upon a quick glance, you can see more of these kind of dark blue robes. You can see some teal ones, a lime green pair, which is quite painful on the eyes. And he leads you into a separate, smaller room towards the back, which is indeed a bathroom with running water, so you can get tidied up. Okay, so back into the main room. What are you doing?
Well, I'm glad to see that you're okay, Esther. I was getting a little bit worried, but we had a bit of a trial, to say the least, and yeah, it didn't go very well, to be fair. Could have really done without that, but Jenrik, as I was trying to communicate with you earlier, we've come here to search for some information. Kewin has been sent by the church to do a bit of a missive for them. It's quite important. In fact, it's very important. It's not for me to tell you what that is, but suffice to say that we need to find, or we're trying to find, Katarina Brunn. And we were told back in Dranau that you would be a good place to start. I'm sure when Kewin comes back from the bathroom, he'll explain more.
Yeah. So Jevrik has perched himself on the arm of Esther's chair. Esther is now quite happily lathering up a crumpet with some butter and jam. But he perches himself quite elegantly on the arm of Esther's chair. And he stands there with this cup in his left hand, with a spoon inside which is stirring itself, and the other pulling out what appears to be like a little pouch of, you'd assume, pipe weed or something similar, which he pops on the table next to him to obviously deal with later. As you say this to him, you see the spoon stops in its movements, pauses for a brief second, before resuming at a slower pace. Jenrik looks at you thoughtfully. I haven't seen Katarina in quite a few years. She was she is my best student. A brilliant young woman with a brilliant mind. I will assist you in any way, in any attempts to find her. I am deeply saddened by the news that she is missing, and it is a great concern for us all. What can I help you with?
Well, Kewin's not here, but well, I suppose I can tell you some of it. Kewin has some notes that were belonging to Katarina, and we need to try and decode the cipher. And to be fair, we don't really know where to start. You'd have to ask Kewin, he carries the notes, not me. And there is a grave reason why we need to do this. We don't know whether Katarina is alive or not. We don't know where she is, nobody knows where she is. And we have no proof either way, to the best of my knowledge. But that is all that I can really tell you. You really would need to speak to Kewin. We're just here to help him fulfill his task that's been set. And we've travelled a long way, and we've run into a lot of bother along the route as well, and sorted out a lot of stuff, but yeah, it's not been easy.
Jenrik nods at you knowingly. Well, I am saddened to know that I have increased the burden of your journey further. I apologise, truly, I do. And he looks at each of you in the eyes as he says so, nodding his head with each word. It was only a self-defense mechanism. Truly no snub to you.
Well, it's a good job. I accept your apology. Kewin's the one that ran into real problems. To be fair, we thought we were going to lose him before we got here. It was a serious situation. I don't know how bad he's feeling right now, but he wasn't in a good way.
In that case...
No, he wasn't.
In that case, we shall attend to him as soon as he's back with us. I may have some healing healing items available. I shall see what I can do to repay the damage that my defences have wrought.
Also, if the the large creature in the cave was your defence mechanism, you might need a new one.
Laura's gonna laugh.
Oh, yes, thank you for letting me know.
No problem.
He's, how badly mangled is the corpse? See, I raised him from young, and he's got quite a nasty temper. And I grew less fond of him after the first time he bit me. I never had the heart to kill him, though, or set him free, because he was seen as a pet, I suppose. But if his corpse is still fairly intact, I may run some experiments. Nothing too harmful, but he no longer needs it now, so I might as well make use of it.
Well, there may be one or two issues with that. Laura's going to point at Otto, who is now the dog. I think your guy's demise is probably quite irreversible. Perhaps when Otto's finished drying himself off, he might be able to, actually, I don't think there's a lot he can do about it.
I'm not bothered about it being dead. I just want to know if it's any use.
Oh. Well, Otto was up close and personal, so maybe he'd be able to tell you more about that. Oh, and the dog. That actually is Otto. He's a spring sage. Travels a lot. He's not long joined us, but he seems like a good chap. Kind of rude, but obviously, as I said, I'm a Laura. Kewin, obviously you've worked out as borrowing your bathroom. And this is our ranger. This is Ogvar. Ogvar hails from Kessig. And you've obviously met Esther.
Yes, lovely lady. And he flashes her a winning smile as he does so. He's stroking his beard, quite this kind of pinching motion, which is obviously very kind of regal in a sense. He looks at all of you. Well, Kewin is cleaning himself off, and let's get you lot sorted out with some sustenance, hot drink perhaps.
That would be most welcome. Thank you very much, Jenrik. It's appreciated. And it is actually nice to meet you at last.
Yes. So he then takes your drink orders. He offers you tea or coffee. Offers you something to eat. So whatever you want, whatever you've asked for, a little sandwich, cup of tea, he'll go ahead and make that for you, and he'll disappear into the other room, which you would assume is a kitchen. So Kewin, back in the bathroom, you're washing yourself off. How thoroughly are you washing yourself? Is it just the basic flannel wash, or are you actually having a bath?
Is it? How much detail are we going to go into now?
When you do the sniff test, it smells pretty bad, and when you throw your sock at the wall, it sticks.
Ooh! I'm not even going to ask about anything else.
If your opponent's eyes are tearing while you're fighting from the smell, you have an advantage.
What are you, an onion?
That'd be a good...
I've heard this argument before, but I would caution that if your allies won't come near you to save your ass, he's probably still worth having a bath.
He'd probably have...
And how are you going to take your socks off mid-combat?
Stick him on the end of the pail.
He's a health and safety nightmare, isn't he? He's a sword warmer.
Because he would definitely have a good soak. It won't be a quick, that'll do. He would clean himself properly.
Was it your underpants that were in Orland?
No, it was Watsit, wasn't it?
I know, it was a joke.
Grandson.
Son?
grandson. No, grandson. Okay, so you have yourself a good wash. It is a very luxurious bath. It's like a slipper bath. You'd probably be very familiar with the design, familiar with the taps and the system, Qin, because you would have had the same thing back in your parents' estate. So it's a very decent bath. You get yourself a good wash. You have to empty the bath water out a couple of times to make sure that you're cleaning with clean water. And in the meantime, I'm assuming that after having obviously servants and maids to serve you, you'd have probably been very comfortable with just whipping the kit off and just letting Eric do his thing. So Eric will collect up the...
Can we suggest that Eric is a manservant?
Yes. So he collects up your discarded armour and clothing, and you can all see Eric come out and begin washing them and cleaning them up and polishing them off until he's got them into a respectable state of cleanliness, where he will leave them outside of the door for you, Qin.
Okay. I may take a little wander over with his pile of clothes and just give it a little sniff before retching nearby, before padding back over to Elora and looking for a stroke, a pity stroke at this point.
Yes, Elora will just give him a brief pat on the head and nod and say, yes, I know, Otto, I know.
Just even wet dog smells better.
And then I shall lie down and hide my nose under my paws.
That's very good. He's just cleaned up. He's just cleaned up.
Okay, so Qin, once you're finished, you've toweled yourself off, you've dried yourself off, you've got your clothes and your armour back on, and you're all kind of back to normal. Well, actually probably cleaner than you've been in a fair while. You come out of the room and you are now in the same room as everyone else, who I'm assuming is going to have taken up a seat or sat on the floor. Jenrick himself is sat in a chair as well. So you've all kind of sat around. Food is being passed around, trays of crumpets and small sandwiches which have been elegantly prepared, and you've all got drinks with the exception of Otto.
Might ignore any sort of water or anything put down for him.
Yeah. And yeah, so you walk out into this scene, Qin.
Oh, that feels so much better. I know I had to have one, because obviously I've just been inside a fish, evil eel dragon thing, but I probably would recommend everybody else, if Jenrick's okay with that, especially you, Laura.
What are you trying to say? Yeah, I am a bit soggy.
You're a bit wet and soggy, aren't you?
Yeah, very.
Nothing better than a nice hot bath.
No, you're probably right, but yeah. Mm. Well...
I'll just give you a nudge in the direction.
Maybe, yeah. She's going to look at Jenrick and just sort of raise an eyebrow. Kind of, is it okay?
He gives you a
this
half.
This is your home.
He gives you a half smile and tilts his head in acquiescence, and then shoots Eric a look, and Eric immediately goes to get like fresh towels and things.
Laura will pick her hat up, raise it in the air, tip her head, and she'll disappear in the direction of the bathroom.
Okay. So while you go off to have yourself a nice bath, Laura, and Eric is busily busting around, cleaning up clothing and drying clothing off, Jenrick sat with the rest of you. I'm assuming, Qin, you'd have probably helped yourself to a hot drink and some food. So, Qin, I believe that Laura mentioned you were on a mission. I did say to her that I will help to whatever extent I can. Katerina was and is my greatest student, the brightest mind of her age. I will do whatever is necessary to help you and to help find her. So what do you need from me?
Well, we've got these coded notes and a diary, and we can't really make much of them. Way beyond my thoughts process. I mean, generally speaking, I'm point and press. And the reason being that we have this, what's it called?
histrionic resonator.
This tool, a histrionic resonator, and it's to help get Avacyn from a rift. We hope, but obviously without Katarina's notes, etc., we don't know how to put it together, and it's, you know, we thought that maybe you'd be able to help.
May I see the codex? Is that all right?
Yes, no problem. Here you go.
So Jenrick takes the book from your hands, and he handles it almost reverently. He treats it like a child almost. He handles it gently, runs a hand over its cover. You know, it's you get this sense from him, all of you, that for him, he is quite possibly looking at the last pieces of his favourite student. This is the last thing she has left behind. It is something which is, you know, should he never see her again, this is going to be the most precious thing he has ever handled of hers. It is that kind of moment where everything is quiet and you can almost feel the emotion, like, charging the air. He is at this point puffing steadily on a long pipe, which he has obviously ground the pipe weed up and gently kind of putted it away. And he begins to look through the book. He is deeply immersed in the writings that are held within. And you see he trails his one hand, his pointer finger, his index finger over the pages, obviously following as he flips through. And this is a very slow process, and he's almost muttering to himself. He's very clearly intent and focused, and he's only got perhaps two or three pages in. He's making quite slow progress, but he's two or three pages in. Laura, you finish your bath and you come back out to join this scene. He looks up. Katarina's brilliance has always astounded me. She is as brilliant as the moon above. And once again, her brilliance shines through in this work. I am afraid it is going to take me possibly several days to not even fully decode this. I do not have the capacity to fully decode this, as not all of this is in my cipher. It is... She's brilliant. Purely brilliant. She has combined my cipher with that of another. And at a guess, I would say that would be her uncle's, Hans Reinhardt. I am only able to translate a portion of this, and I will need a couple of days to do so.
We were given the name of... Laura's going to stand there, and she's plaiting her hair back up as she speaks to him. She pops her hat down on a chair while she's doing it and plaits her hair. We were told about Hans Reinhardt. We believe that he's over in Kessig, some astronomer or something. We were told by a friend of hers that was her uncle. So this was to be our next port of call after speaking to you. So yeah, we're familiar with him.
Yes.
We didn't really expect you to have all the answers, but we thought you might be able to help.
Yes. Hans is... again, one of the most brilliant minds of this plane, an astronomer, a genius astronomer. He is able to read the stars like I can read a book. His skill far outstrips mine. My knowledge mainly resides in the arcane, and other such crafts. So yes, you will have to consult with Hans, I'm afraid. However, I will do my best. You are more than welcome to reside here in the meantime. And at this point, the evening is starting. The sun has set below the horizon, and it's set quickly due to this storm that's rolling in. And you can hear the wind now whistling around the tower. in a kind of a high-pitched scream. And Jedrick looks at you. He's, please, by all means, my tower is your tower. Make yourselves at home. Eric will be able to assist with most things. He has some basic knowledge of the arts and the arcane. I am teaching him. And at this, he smiles at Eric. And Eric returns a smile. And he's actually, you notice, although he's been listening to his story, he has been actually writing down notes in a book and scribbling stuff. And he's clearly working on some project or the other, or learning from Jenrik and from Jenrik's words. Jenrik, he looks all of you. The book closed, his finger marking the page, hands kind of folded over each other in his lap. There is, and I hate to impose this on you, and of course you are more than welcome to decline. I will have no hard feelings about it. This will take me several days, I'm afraid. 3 to 4, perhaps longer. It depends how well I make progress. However, in the meantime, there is a slight issue that I would ask you to assist me with. And Eric will also assist you. It is something that I would not send Eric to do alone. There is a small... Well, was a small town. More of a village, really. To the north of here. About half a day's travel. It has been troubling my mind lately. There is evil lurking on the horizon. And I fear that it may be gathering near this tower. I would ask of you, if you are willing, of course, if you would be able to observe what is going on there.
Well, we've seen many evil things along the way. We've experienced an awful lot. It's opened my eyes to a lot of things. I cannot speak for everybody.
Well, we're here now, aren't we? So, it's a favour for a favour, I suppose.
Well, I guess
what,
this is...
What sort of time are we talking about now?
This is early evening.
We have to, favour for a favour and all that. But, if there's any evil around, I suppose I really should. Just have a little speck. Little Ricky.
Well, we've never shied away from anything so far, have we? We've been bundled into from one thing to another on this journey. I suppose this really comes as no surprise, but I'm happy to go along with,
yes.
Whatever.
But if we do, could we possibly have a front door key?
Oh, I'm not going through all that again.
No,
I can't.
No, definitely.
Although, I have to say, on a separate note, it's really very clever. It seems fairly simplistic, but very clever. Even, it is really difficult to get around and quite frustrating. So I congratulate you on that. I'm not able to do those sort of things. My skills kind of lie elsewhere.
He inclines his head and smiles at you, and almost openly laughs at you, Ogvar. It's this kind of dusty, dry kind of ha-ha kind of laugh. The doors will be open to you for entry and exit.
Fabulous.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
Okay.
So, I'll take the opportunity to finally return to my human form.
Yep, okay.
Stretch out a little bit, cracking out the spine.
Ah, Otto, I'm glad that you could join us again.
I never really left, did I? Didn't seem to be a lot worth saying.
No, your fur is very lustrous. It's very nice.
It's a little bit better than my own set of hair.
I can't argue with that, but...
So, what can you tell us about this town?
Jenrik looks at you. Yes, there have been... I haven't seen it personally, but I... There were just ominous feelings from there. And the little bit of scrying I have done has revealed that things are not quite as they should be. The town is called Saltstone. Nestled into a small bay called Saltstone Bay. It was a couple of decades ago a prosperous and thriving little community. I'd mainly get all of my supplies from there. They would transport them down from Selhoff down to Saltstone. They had a couple of small ships. Not much trade going along, but it was a small fishing village. Probably 1,000 or so residents. It was a charming little place. Very well looked after. Tired, but maintained well. You know, the men would go out on the boats and go fishing, and the women would stay and do a bit of farming. It was very traditional, you could say. And then, a couple of decades back, must be 40 or so years ago now, there was a terrible sickness that swept across the town. It brought fever and vomiting and death, ultimately. A vast swathe of the populace was killed by this illness. The few that weren't were eventually took their leave. But out of the 1,000 or so people, probably 800 or so buried in the seagrass. It was a terrible tragedy, and there was not much anyone could do to stop it. The sickness swept through the town and left destruction in its wake. And ever since then, the town has been abandoned. Those that did survive buried their dead and moved on. Abandoned the place as cursed. As far as I'm aware, the town is now standing empty and rotting. Occasional beasts make their way through and move on, but it's desolate, or it's supposed to be.
And now you think something else is there?
Yes. There was a terrible storm which swept up the coast. A Nebelgast, I believe.
Oh, we got caught in that. We were at Drenau when that hit. And it came this far south?
No, it didn't. I know there was one. I saw it on the horizon. Up the coast. But on that day, I spied from the top of my tower while I was gazing towards the heavens. I just by chance decided to gaze up the coastline. A whim. It happens every so often. And indeed I saw the banks of clouds rolling in over Drenau. But I also spied something in the harbour in Saltstone. It looked to be amidst the wrecked ships that remain there, it looked to be a new ship, or a relatively new vessel. But it certainly wasn't one I remember being there.
I'm sorry, I'm not sure I understand what you're saying. A new ship, a new wrecked ship, or a new vessel sailing in?
No, a new vessel. There are a couple of wrecked ships in the harbour, old and beaten down. But this appeared to be a new one, one that was still floating.
Did you see any crew at all?
No, I saw no crew, and it troubles me greatly.
Did it sail in, or did it just appear? Did you actually see it sail in? Out of a storm, or...?
No, I didn't see it sail at all.
It was just there when you looked?
Yes, essentially. I don't often turn my telescope to the coasts. I look up to the stars and the skies to see what the infinite pattern engraved up there can tell me. But just by chance, a gut feeling, I looked up the coast and that is what I saw.
And has it gone now, or is it still there?
No, it remains.
Oh.
Okay.
And this is the source of your uneasiness, I presume?
Yes, and I hope you would understand the lengths I went to test you, I suppose.
Well, clearly it makes you nervous, but could it not just be people moving back into an empty settlement? People resettling from somewhere else, maybe?
For 40 years there has been nothing.
Right.
And now, with things going awry on the plane, strange forces at work, and with the news that dearest Katerina is missing, the picture that this is painting is not so blessed by Avacyn's light.
No, and we've come across some strange things, one between Gloomrest and Drenau, and one when we were travelling from the Drunken Mire back to Drenau. Long story, won't explain it now, but we've heard of things like where the Shadowfell crosses the Innistrad Plain just at certain times, it intersects, and we had some very strange experiences that we can't explain. But things that left us with, well, certainly one of them that left us with something physical, something tangible from it. So there are
Planar interference is rare, as you say, and it is something that I have studied in passing. I have never been, I suppose, unfortunate enough to experience it myself, but I have heard of it happening.
It was most curious, most disturbing, but most curious at the same time. We did tell Esther about it when we got to Drenau, but then Esther had an experience with us, as I say, on the way back from the Drunken Mire. It was things that you could hear, things... In one case, it was what you could hear. In another case, it was something physical that you could see. It was there, and then it wasn't there. The hearing voices, things from a different time. Otto, we'll have to tell you about this another time, Otto, because... Maybe we can explain it to you. Have you ever experienced anything, Otto? We've not really had a chance to talk about this sort of thing.
No, that's a bit beyond my own knowledge. I'd very much like to hear more of this, though, of course.
Yeah, we'll fill you in during some downtime. Yeah, we'll tell you about that. It was an interesting experience, but one that couldn't really be explained.
My thanks. So when would you like us to go and have a look at this ship? I presume it can wait at least until the morning?
Of course, there is no rush, and only if you wish to. But it would put my mind at ease if you could. As I said, it's going to take me several days to work through these notes.
Well, for my part, I'll be guided by Ogvar, as always. My staff is yours.
Okay. Not used to being in in this position, but I think generally the consensus is that we go, don't you think, Laura?
Absolutely. On my travels, I have done things that I never thought I would do. I have seen things that I never thought I would see, Ogvar, and I've shared them with people that I never thought I would be with. Yeah, I stand with you, as always.
Okay, how about you, Kewin? Are you okay for a jaunt out?
Oh, yes. We'll test the new improved Kewin. Make sure he doesn't charge at the nearest thing. Maybe, you know. We'll see.
Okay. It's a positive outlook, I suppose.
Well, it was a rather expensive lesson, or could have been.
Oh, yes.
Jenrik, are you sure that, I mean, considering your, perhaps nervous isn't the right word, but considering, given your concern about safety and protecting yourself in your abode, which is the most interesting building I've ever seen, by the way, are you sure? Is it just you and Eric here?
Yes, it is just the two of us, yes.
Are you sure that you want Eric to travel out and not stay with you at the tower? Well, obviously, you clearly don't need that much protection, but, you know, two people are better than one, so to speak.
I am more than capable of looking after myself.
Yeah, I didn't mean any offence.
I am not offended. I take no offence. I am able to look after myself. The trip out to Saltstone is one that I would have made myself. However, with these notes to decode now, I think it'd be wise.
I think it's important that you concentrate on those if it's going to take your time, and then we'll do whatever bidding you need.
Esther could always keep you company.
Alora's going to
look at Alora and just like wink.
Alora's going to widen her silver eye and look with one raised eyebrow at Ogvar, like a short, sharp sort of glance at him. The side of her mouth will twitch, but she'll try and maintain a neutral face.
Jenrik gives a sly smirk at you. clears his throat. Yes. I wouldn't wish to turf a good lady out into the cold and dangerous elements out there.
Alora's going to give him a long stare. She's just going to maintain eye contact. Through her eye, what aura can she see around Jenrik?
Around Jenrik, you can see a very obvious and very clear silver aura.
Hmm. Okay.
What does that mean?
Did you know that the Archangel Avacyn is locked inside the Hell Vault? Did you already know this information?
No, that is new to me.
Then you realise that I know that you don't take visitors, but that must go no further.
Of course.
Yeah, I'm sure. I just needed to ask the question. Again, I don't mean offence. Can Alora tell roughly how old Jenrik looks? I mean, obviously you said that he'd got liver spots on the back of his hand, but is it possible to gauge an age range?
Yeah, I mean, you'd say he looks in his possibly late 70s to early 80s.
Likes the younger woman.
He looks younger than Bishop Gerhardt.
Right. Okay.
He has a bearing of, like, the older kind of sage master. That's the kind of bearing, the aura he gives off. And he's looking very good for his age. He does look incredibly well. But you would say kind of mid-70s to early 80s, that kind of age range.
Okay. Yep, fine.
much to the chagrin of her cranky companions, at the top of the tower, they found Esther ensconced in an enormous armchair, in good spirits and literally living her best life. With wizardly introductions complete, Jenrick's assistant Eric extended a high level of hospitality, including sustenance and baths to sluice away the salt, sweat, and the smelly socks of a long afternoon's sufferance. Otto opted to wild shape into man's best friend, and subsequently parked his shaggy fur by the fireplace to fully dry off. Meanwhile, across the room, the mage in midnight blue listened to the tale the companions told. Acknowledging their appeal for aid and their dire need to crack Katerina's codex, Jenrick generously granted them residence as he committed to their cause. However, the tower's keeper had an agenda of his own and appealed to his new acquaintances for assistance in investigating a sinister ship he had spied anchored in the harbour at the abandoned settlement of Saltstone. Hey, you made it this far, so lend us your ears for a moment longer if you will. Firstly, we are most humbled that you are enjoying our yarn, and the crew thank you from the bottom of their hearts for your patronage. Producing this podcast is incredibly hard work, and as such, if you would like to support us, there are a few ways in which you could really make a difference. Sharing links to friends and family helps to spread the word, so others like you can find us, and in turn they too can enjoy the show. Equally helpful is leaving a 5-star review on Spotify and any other streaming services, which will help us immensely. Or, if you feel you could go that extra mile and contribute a few coppers to keep our creative juices flowing, you can hop on over to our Buy Me a Coffee page or drop us an email. We would all be immensely grateful for your support in any form. Lastly, we invite you to visit our website, where you will find information on our campaign from backstories to settings. Join our Facebook group or follow us on Twitter. All the links are in our episode bios. Don't forget to smash the subscribe and download buttons so you never miss the next episode. See you all again next week, folks.